dealing with Ted since Monstrous Holiday. And it is a great joy for me. I'm very thrilled to be able to work on it.
Well, for you, anyway.
So we are here to celebrate Ted and 10 years of Courtney Frommer. Jumped on the scene in 1998 with Gloom Cookie, with Serena Valentino. And shortly thereafter, in 2002, Courtney Frommer launched. It originally started as an ongoing series. Four issues a book, basically. Issues an arc.
Yeah.
It was nominated for an Eisner for Best Limited Series in 2003 and Best Title for Younger Audience in 2005. In 2006, he released Pollyanna Pirates, which was nominated for a Harvey. Shortly thereafter came six volumes, I think, of Def Jr., and then How Loathsome, which is definitely an 18 and old for kind of book. and that one it was on the Advocate's Best of 2004 list, so that was actually before Polly.
Yeah, actually, that was why, right after the first Courtney.
And then followed two volumes of Good Neighbor Holly Black.
Three volumes.
Oh, was it three?
Yeah, it ended up being three.
You forgot.
It's a lot of work.
Earlier this year, we released the second volume of Pollyanna Pirates, which was illustrated by Robbie Rodriguez. And then we started Coloring and Courtney. We are very, very pleased with how it's turned out. And I think that for this talk, I'm going to ask Ted a few questions, and then we'll go straight up Q&A for a bit. So.
Yes. What did y'all think of the color?
Ted was steering the ship on every color decision there, so it's exactly what he wanted.
I really did also leave, the heavy lifting to Warren. I mean, I really tried to stay hands off and not say, do it like this, do it like that. And in my world, Courtney has brown eyes. At some point, I noticed that he was doing her with blue eyes, and I just he's the colorist. I'm letting him do his thing, and that's fine.
Yeah, Warren Wisenich is a up-and-coming colorist. He's doing excellent, excellent work. He previously colored Rascal Raccoon's Rage and Revenge for us at Only Press, too. But we are really pleased with his work on all the volumes of Courtney.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. And I was going to color for the next series that I do, which we'll talk about in a minute. I was going to color it myself because I really always dreamed of doing that. But once I saw Warren's work, I'm just like, you know what? I'm not doing that. I'm going to let him do it. I don't have time. I can't be bothered.
Yeah.
He's better than I could be. He's just going to put more time and energy and subtlety and interest into it than I would have the energy to do.
He's channeling your vision anyway.
He's
doing a pretty good job.
He knows how to do that, and it's really, really been wonderful.
So, how did you start drawing? What is your education?
Well, I have some vague memories from being very, two or three and, doing a stack of, drawings of, the Super Friends, because I was a big, I don't know if anybody's familiar with this, but back in the 70s, we didn't have the Justice League. We had the Super Friends. They were super, and they were all friends. And I would draw them. Sometimes I would notice after the piece was done, and I'd go back and look at it, and I forgot to add arms to this character. And then I, draw these little, sticks. Yeah. But, my first drawings were, Superman, Batman, Robin, all those characters. And I guess I've been a comic book person for ever since that point.
Forever and ever.
Yeah, forever and ever. I was, as a little kid, I drew Ultraman, or at least I attempted to. That was my first foray into foreshortening. When you're, because I don't know if you're all familiar with Ultraman, but he was a giant silver man that came from space, and the main character, whose name I can't remember now, summoned Ultraman with this beta capsule, there would be the shot of Ultraman foreshortened and punching into the screen, and I learned to draw that at a ridiculously young age, and I'm told that that was unusual for kids, so I was a prodigy.
So did you end up attending art school, or?
I then went into taking private lessons with a teacher, a private teacher, that at first, you know, when I was very, very young, like around eight or not, like seven or eight, and then later on, like when at some point in my early teens, I started seeing her again and going and getting lessons again. Carol Garcia was her name, and she is a fine artist.
So your parents were super supportive of this. I have not heard of many parents that would sign their kids up for drawing lessons.
Well, you know, my brother and sister were a lot smarter and more academic, and they were like, oh my God, you know, we got to play to this kid's strengths. He's got nothing else. You know, like it's this or, you know, a career in McDonald's, you know, as a fry cook.
So are they proud of how far you've gone?
They are. Like, my mom once told me that when she was working at NASA, she was like telling a coworker that she was really worried about how I was doing in school, and like, I think we may have to take care of him for the rest of his life because this kid is not doing well. And her coworker said, he's going to work out the best of all of them. You know, which is not true because my brother's a lawyer and my sister owns property and so on. I don't have either of those things, but you know, I'm certainly happy.
Yes. Okay. I had no idea your mom worked at NASA.
She did biofeedback research for sleep, all that kind of stuff, until you know Reagan took over and like cut all the funding for all that stuff. And then she got into it. Now she's a psychiatrist.
All right. So how early did you start writing and drawing short stories?
When did I leave Ultraman behind? Well, I gave up on comics. I mean, I wasn't really into comics through my until like I don't know about 14 or 15 when Watchmen and Swamp Thing and the Dark Knight Returns book and the Mage. I don't know if you're familiar with Mage by Matt Wagner. Anybody? And I got really into that stuff. I loved Matt Wagner's work at the time.
So you've always been dark and spooky.
And I liked the dark and spooky, you know. And of course, you know, Watchmen's pretty dark and spooky, but and then of course Sandman came out and that steered my, because I was into the whole goth thing from like 15, if you're familiar with that, I don't know if any of you are. And that turned into, you know, that turned into kind of this aesthetic that I can't seem to shake. Like when I did Polly and the Pirates, I was like, I want it light and shiny and fluffy. Thank you. And then I looked at the actual finished pages, and it's like, wow, this is kind of a moody, shiny, fluffy children's book with lots of shadows. I just, you know, you give me a brush, and I only know one way to act. So, there you go.
Well, you do tend heavily towards Victorian, or, you know, the, I can't even remember what you call it when it's, like, right at that turn of the century.
Oh, Victorian, Edwardian.
Edwardian.
Yeah.
What are your influences in that area?
Well, I was really into Dave McKean. He was really... And, of course, I live in San Francisco, and there's lots of tall, skinny Victorian houses, which I kind of like.
So you kind of modeled all the houses in Polly and Courtney own houses?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I live in a neighborhood where with all the tallest, skinniest Victorian houses in the city in San Francisco. And I, at some point, I noticed that some of them had a really nautical theme, and I started to imagine them as these flying, you know, ships with Victorian houses on them and stuff. And then I thought, well, I should build a story around that. And that's how Polly got started. Can you all hear me? Okay, just checking. And that's how Polly got started is like, you know, it was originally going to be flying ships, and I thought, you know what, I can only cram so much into this. So let's just make them ships that are Victorian houses. And like the reinvent San Francisco as this sort of like kooky little city of floating Victorian houseboats.
I heard that you had to go very far to reinvent it.
Yeah, it wasn't that.
It's already pretty.
As it turned out, you know, like there really were, like in San Francisco in the 1800s, they would bring ships up on land and just turn them into buildings because, like, it was pre-built and there were rooms in it already and lamps and whatever, and they just, you know, would like bring them onto the, I can't remember that's called mooring onto the shore, and they just open up shops in them, and then that became, you know, like restaurants and bars and stuff, and that became kind of a standard, and then all that good stuff like collapsed in the earthquake and became landfill.
What inspired Courtney initially?
Well, I was looking for something new. I had just done Gloom Cookie, and I wanted to do something that was, had kind of the trinity of awesome that Gloom Cookie had, which was it was spooky, It was sexy and it was adorable. And I was trying to figure out, can I come up with something else that's all three of those things? And I'd come up with How Loathsome, which was sexy and spooky, but it wasn't really adorable. It was kind of harsh and sharp and, you know, kind of, you know, aggro. And it wasn't super commercial either. And so I started thinking further, and I came up with Courtney, but it was only, it was spooky and it was adorable, but it wasn't sexy. And I thought, you know what, it doesn't need to be sexy. Let's skip sexy this time and just do spooky and adorable. And it manages to be both of those things at least. And I think it does well without having to be sexy. Like the kid's about, instead of making her a sexy teenager, she's like a little tween nebbish. So I'm happy with that. And it was more commercial. And also, like, there's enough sexy in comics, I think, you know, like, especially where girls are concerned. There's enough, like, you know, sexy girls in comics. Let's, like, let's do a story about a girl where that's just not the issue. You know, let me try that and see how it goes. And it went really well. It was real lots of fun. And I feel like I got somewhere that, you know, a lot of other, you know, most other books just haven't gotten to yet. You know, never really got it, you know, never really expressed. I got to explore stuff that, you know, books, that, especially books for girls, don't tend to explore as much.
Well,
and that was fun.
In particular, that sort of feeling removed, feeling unconnected from things, not, you know.
Yeah.
At least back when Courtney started, for sure, there wasn't much that I felt that, that really, you know, girl comics were happy and fluffy.
Yeah, they were about friendship.
Yeah.
They have to be about friendship because girls are social creatures.
Yes.
You know, they're not alone, they're not alienated, they're not, you know, they don't have problems making friends. Girls make friends, that's what they do. And, maybe that's true, but that's not what I wanted. I mean, that's not my experience. And so, you know, like, as when I was a tween, I was very much, like, I would have birthday parties with, like, two friends or maybe one, and, you know.
As a sad, lonely goth girl myself, I didn't have birthday parties.
Oh, boo.
And it was pretty terrible.
Yeah, and you know, shockingly, like, I mean, when the movie started, you know, the movie deal started happening, I think there was a lot of pressure to skip the alienated loner part of Courtney and make it about Courtney making friends, and so she would make friends with Alicia and all the shitty girls that she goes to school with, you know, and I'm like, why are you doing it that way, you know, because girls make friends, that's just what girls do. You know, and you know, I didn't want to make it about, I don't think I know anything about the female experience. I just kind of wanted to kind of write about my own experiences, but give it enough of, like, change it enough by making it about a girl that I would maybe discover something that, you know, like, fresh and different, and that, you know, is not extremely well covered ground in fiction already.
And I tend to think that alienated experience is an adolescent.
It's pretty universal.
It's really gendered.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, yeah.
Did you have anybody in particular in mind when you created Allivicious?
You know, it was like the vague idea of Aleister Crowley, but like the fantasy children's idea of Aleister Crowley, not the actual reality. But I thought, you know, I love the idea of the creepy old sorcerer.
There probably aren't enough drugs and...
Yeah, there's no drugs
in
it, you know.
Aleister's
But I mean, it was like an archetype that had been floating around the back of my mind, like the creepy old, you know, lonely old man that, you know, that is full of knowledge and magic and stuff, but like doesn't have a lot of friends and is very secretive and mysterious. And I thought there was something kind of cool about the idea of this ancient old man who's lonely and isolated and grumpy, and this little 11-year-old girl who's lonely, isolated, and grumpy. And them somehow finding each other and connecting. I thought there was something kind of sweet and magical about that, you know. And I guess, I mean, it seems to have worked out.
So, how come everybody in Courtney has claws for hands?
Well, the thing is, Courtney was originally, I had just done Gloom Cookie, and it was very cartoony. And I was going to continue Courtney and do Courtney as a very cartoony, simple-looking book. But as I kept drawing it, it got richer and more detailed. And so, I had started off where everybody was very sharp and angular and just crude little drawings. And then as it got more detailed and less and more representational and less, cartoonish, things like the hands, just like, was I going to start adding fingernails to them? I wasn't, I didn't.
You already had a model established.
I had a model established. And so, all the details got added in, and so the hands now look weird. Like, why are you doing it like that? Same with the nose. In none of my sketches did I show Courtney in profile. And so I start actually drawing the book, and I realized at some point I was drawing her in profile. I was trying to work out, does she have it? You could see in, page 3, there's, her waking up, and there's a thing at the foot of her bed. And I was like, okay, how am I going to, I'm going to put a core shadow on her. How am I going to deal with the nose with this core shadow? And I just kind of indicated subtly a sort of a nose, a lump of nose there. And then I got to a point where I actually had to, really make a decision. Is there a nose or is there not a nose? When I turned and showed her in profile and I tried with the nose and it didn't look like her anymore. And then I just completely eliminated the nose and she was back to being Courtney again. And I'm like, okay, that's what she must look like. She must have just be, a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. Basically.
So what sort of things inspire your design for various night things?
Hieronymus Bosch. I really dug out. I wanted to get. I was a big. I had these ideas in my head of I'd read the Rossetti poem, the Goblin Market Rossetti poem, which I don't know if you guys are familiar with this.
It's Christina Rossetti.
Oh no, it's the fella. What's his name?
Oh, it's the other one.
My brain is not working right now. It's the third day of Comic-Con, ladies and gentlemen. Ted Navy and half of his brain are here just live for you. The other Rossetti, the fella whose name I can't remember, but I remember liking the poem, and I he has all this imagery about these goblins that are all these weird, creepy shapes, snails and little snail men and whatnot, and he was clearly inspired by Bosch, and so I went and looked at old Hieronymus Bosch paintings of, hell and and he was doing it as probably it was probably a whole bunch of inside jokes about the political system back at at the time when he was painting them. He's a 16th century painter that apparently did a lot of psychedelics, because you do back in the 16th century.
Well, sometimes that would happen accidentally. They get bad rye.
Bad rye, and then
and just accidentally.
There you go, and then have discover a career as a painter.
So, yeah, I've done my research.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yeah, well done. And he has this kind of weird medieval kind of aesthetic, of course. And so that really informed the birds with the scissor beaks and that's like a little goblin with the head of a bird with a scissor beak and all that stuff. That was really fun. That was from Bosch. Weird little, weasel creatures and all this stuff and that. I had been a big Brian Froud fan. I don't know if you're familiar with Brian Froud. He designed the goblins in Labyrinth. And he has this very particular style, which I completely adore. But I didn't want my goblins to look exactly like his goblins, so I kind of brought in this other influence. And I feel like I came up with something that is more cartoony, more graphical, a little more Jonan Vasquez-y, which, he's an influence too. I'm not gonna disguise it. I feel like I came up with something that's more or less my own style that, is a little bit unique.
So, I can't remember when this issue comes out because it's day 3 of Comic Con. Mm-hmm. But there's an issue coming up to 5 that is a little bit of backstory.
Oh, yes.
For Aloysius. And so I can't tell you what it's about. However,
it is Aloysius' backstory. It's an aside.
It is an aside. It's an important aside. Do you feel like you have more Aloysius stories to tell beyond this one that's coming?
I probably have one more. I do want to tell eventually, I want to get to the backstory of Calpurnia Crisp. And where she comes from and how she was, you know, became friends with Aloysius and et cetera, and was learned magic.
I think that would be very exciting. Yeah. I look forward to reading that.
Yeah, but so I want to do that one, and that's it. Like, that's, like, I mean, like, that would probably be most of Aloysius' significant backstory, because, I mean, you know, you want to keep him somewhat mysterious.
Right.
And there's, you know, there's going to be some other backstory elements in about Aloysius in the beginning of the next arc, which is going to be issue 6. You get to see him as a little kid very briefly. You know, the book's about Courtney, and it really is, like, everything about Aloysius that's interesting is really mostly interesting because of what it says about Courtney, I think. People,
what it means for his relationship.
Yeah, what it means is his relationship.
It definitely informs how he treats her.
Yeah.
And how he's able to love her.
And why it's difficult for him to, like, you know, connect with people and stuff.
In case anybody's wondering, we will be collecting the long out-of-print Tales of a Warlock in, I don't remember, it's like volume 6 probably, and so it'll be colored and it will come out. I know that...
Has anybody seen this, Portrait of a Warlock, the Aloysius backstory stuff? Yeah. It was a little different flavor and not as for kids kind of a story. I mean, it was, you know, kid friendly, but it wasn't really about, it's about Aloysius as a young man and all that.
Yeah, I know that one's been hard to find for quite a while, so
yeah.
It's coming. So, are we ready for Q&A?
Sure, are we ready for Q&A?
Oh. Do you have anything else to say?
I will find out.
All right. I think the third commander can have something. Mm-hmm. Back there, please. Speak up loud.
Who is your favorite Batman character? Which are there any characters in the settings that you'd like to see any crossovers in?
I don't know. Maybe we should table that for, like, later in the discussion, because I want to stick with Courtney for a little while longer. But you do get a sketch for asking about Batman. Because, you know, that was a thing. Yeah. Apparently, a Twitter follower, my follower on Twitter. Are you guys familiar? Any of you guys familiar with this Twitter business? Like, apparently it's, like, it's important. Like, I was told, you know, oh, you have to be on Twitter. You have to be on Twitter. And I said, why? And they said, oh, because, you know, step 1, get on Twitter. Step 3, profit. But I will get to, I'll get back to Batman. But I, you know, like,
he always does.
Sorry, and I'm sorry about the whole Batman thing. I know that it's not everybody's cup of tea.
Did you have a question?
You know, it was the wider world, right? Courtney's world is very much her little kids, like, you know, her little suburban, you know, environment. And also I wanted Aloysius to feel a little more realistic. I wanted his adventure to feel more like a pulp adventure. I mean, that's kind of why I had, like, you know, the one pulp hero type character in it that gets turned into a goose. Spoilers. And I wanted it to feel more like a pulp adventure story, and, like, to be a little more of an adult, kind of more of a boy story. I don't think that it wasn't all that conscious. You know, most of it isn't conscious. You know, I could tell you a story about how I made this decision and that decision, but, you know, I just kind of feel it out and, like, do, you know, like, yeah, this feels like the right thing, right? And then I'll tell myself a story about why I did it later.
Don't we all?
Yeah.
Next up. Go ahead.
Will we ever see, like, Courtney as a grown up?
I have given that some thought. I don't know. I may reinvent the series at some point, but I just don't really. I mean, Courtney is about being a tween. You know, like, so it's the minute she hits 15 and, you know, starts dating, like, she's not really the same character anymore. you know, it's a whole different kind of book. She has to mellow a lot too, you know, and like, you know, Courtney with all of that power and like dating boys and having influences over boys, that would be a very much darker, you know, less innocent character. Although it may happen.
I also feel like you snuck in the sexy with the crumbling tails.
Yeah, a little bit of sexy. Although, you know, like everybody kept their clothes on.
Well, it was a different time.
Sexy doesn't. Well, yeah.
But they had to be very proper.
Like Jane.
Yeah, that's true. But I worry about characters, you know, being uncomfortable, you know, like being cold. So I keep their coats on most of the time. Like. Yeah, that's true. You know, I worry because it's, you know, it's foggy, it's night, you know, like I get lazy, so I don't want to finish the drawing. So I just say, oh, it was foggy out there that night. It was foggy in that room. It was foggy on that sunny beach, you know. That's why I'm not finishing the legs and like, you know, wrapping, you know. I'm sorry? Exactly. Yeah. And I like overcoats. I think they're like, especially period overcoats are very, they have a flair that I like. Did you have a question? You held your hand up a while back, so. Yes, there will be older characters coming back into the story here and there. Are you asking about a particular character? Like Butterbug? I don't know. I kind of forgot about the goblins, the, you know, the goblin brothers. I don't have any immediate plans for putting Rawhead back in. He's just sort of always going to be there, like down there in the goblin world, being like, you know, ready to punish you if you've been terribly, terribly bad.
He really scared the crap out of me. He's really scary. that scene where he kills, I can't remember what that, or Warlock's family's name is.
Yeah, where he stalks, that he goes into the house and he, you know, gobbles up the family.
That is terrifying.
Yeah.
when I hand sell the book to 7-year-olds, I make sure that they can handle spooky.
Yeah. I'm okay with selling, like, 7-year-olds can get volume 1, but I think they need to be 8 or older to get volume 2. Like, I do feel like there's, like, a cutoff point where it's like, no, this is too much. And I don't like sad, I don't like stories where nothing good happens. Like, I couldn't get through, I know this is, you know, way too revealing, but I couldn't get through the Lemony Snicket books, because nothing good happens to any of the characters at any point. I mean, they're plucky and they get out of danger, but that's not the same thing as good things happening. Like with Harry Potter, at least good things happen to Harry a lot, you know, along with all the horrible stuff. You know, so I could get through that stuff, but like I just can't handle, like that's why I can't get into Game of Thrones either, because like I read about halfway through the book. And I stop reading it, and my friends are like, you know, what'd you think? And I'm like, I didn't finish it. And they're like, well, you gotta finish it, it's so good, you gotta finish it, it's so good. And I said, you know, well, can I ask you a question? Does anything good happen to any of the characters at any point in this story? Because thus far I've read 250 pages, and nothing good has happened to anybody. And he's like, huh. You know, no, nothing good ever happens to any of them. But, oh, it does get a lot worse. So I never did finish Game of Thrones. And I kind of like good things to happen to my characters occasionally, which I think makes it okay to, like, you know, have goblins come in and gobble up whole families. Like, that's tolerable if something good might happen to some of the characters at some point.
One good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, like a hug.
A hug.
A smile.
So, a question I have. Posited earlier, what is your favorite Hornstyle curse?
Oh.
Curse word, rather. Expletive.
Well, I did pat myself on the back for this one. Brain fart. As a description of a person. These, like, Courtney considers the people she goes to school with pretty much brain farts. I made that up. I don't think anybody's ever used that to describe people, and I feel pretty good about that.
I think it describes your classmates really well.
Yeah. And it's not actually a bad word. You know, it's a little bit, you know, which just makes it work. But, so I felt good. I mean, it's really like, you get to the point where it's like, wait a minute, I wrote a bad word in my script for children. I'm not sure that, you know, the F word really belongs in this book. But what else is, you know, what else, what other word is right for this moment? And, like, I can't think of anything. And then, you know, brain fart comes along and there you are.
Any more questions? I'm sure that somebody's got questions. Go for it.
I kind of like with the current run.
Yeah.
We don't really see necessarily what Ollie's thinking. We're kind of learning with Courtney or trying to figure out if what's going on with her. If she's really kind of going dark or if it's just kind of growing up type of thing.
Uh-huh. And so you felt like that worked?
Yeah.
And good.
So,
thank you. Oh no, I had this idea that I would show that, you know, Holly's become like, you know, cuz I wanted to show Courtney versus Nega Courtney, you know, that was the idea, right? And so I don't know if you're familiar with Nega, you know, the whole, you know, like Scott Pilgrim versus Nega Scott, you know, in the Scott Pilgrim story, which I was touched by, so I wanted to do Courtney Crumrin versus Nega Courtney Crumrin, and like, would Nega Courtney Crumrin be like Courtney but evil, or would Nega Courtney Crumrin be like Courtney Crumrin but good? Because it's hard to say, you know, really. Like, and then I realized that Nega Courtney is basically just like Courtney. You know, like, what if Courtney met somebody who's exactly like her? That would be Nega Courtney. You know, what else is there? Like, but the same person. That, I mean, you know, like, if somebody like Courtney meeting someone who's exactly like themselves, that person would probably at some point become their arch nemesis. So that's kind of what I wanted to explore. You know, because I mean, Courtney's a little too young and too unguided in her life to really be particularly good or particularly evil. She's just kind of not 100% conscious. You know, she's trying to figure it out, right? What kind of a person she is. So there you go. That was the idea, was that, you know, it was Courtney versus Nega Courtney, and Nega Courtney is basically just another Courtney. Anyway, yeah.
I think the question earlier kind of got covered. Do you think, I mean, obviously there's a vast age difference between Aloysius and Courtney.
Yeah.
Do you think you have the post-Aloysius Courtney stories to tell?
Again, without Aloysius, she's a completely different character.
Absolutely.
You know, and so, stories are the situation that the character is in, as well as this character. The plot is the character, and the character is the plot, right? Without Aloysius, without Courtney being, like, you know, what, she's 13 now? Like, the minute she gets to be 15 and starts dating boys, she becomes a completely different type of person. And so she's not, it's not, the Courtney Crumrin story stops being the Courtney Crumrin story and becomes something else. So, and I thought about what I would do with Courtney if she's older and, like, maybe, like, basically a professional babysitter or something, and, like, it would be, like, Mary Poppins, but evil.
She could trade babies for favors from the
novel. Totally. Like, okay, you know, you are just such a pain in the ass. I think, actually, replacing you with a changeling would be a big favor for your parents. So, that may actually happen. Or Courtney and Calpurnia, yeah, going off on adventures together. Yeah, Courtney would become Calpurnia, you know, in a way. I mean, like, the idea being that maybe, you know, with the right guidance, Courtney might become Calpurnia. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, that, like, without Aloysius in the picture, it's not the same book. I mean, he's just as much, like, a part of it as she is. Like, you know, what's Superman without Lois Lane? Which one?
Yes, you go for it.
I really want to do another one.
I want you to.
Maybe.
Put it in every issue
just for me. Just for you? You want like one of the evil talking cats?
I love that.
Well, they're cats. Of course they're evil. They're cats. Did I mention that? They're cats. Of course they're evil. Cats are not good creatures. They're,
you know,
they're cuddly. They're nice. But it's like, they're like vampires, you know? They're like, just because they're awesome and sexy and fun doesn't mean they're good.
I have a little tidbit first. I dressed as Courtney Darwin.
Yes.
In freshman year of high school. And I made her shirt using Sharpie.
Uh-huh. As well as the merits of sniffing markers. Thank you. Thank you very much for that.
I think she should get one of these for that.
Yeah, beautiful name. The best slurry. They've got the correct.
Well, that's a good question. I like the name Courtney because it's very gothic. But I just met a girl named Kelly Crumrin. And we started dating. And I really liked her last name, and I was looking for kind of a spooky Victorian style, kind of semi goth, Roald Dahl fairy tale story. And I thought, well, what would this character's name be? And I thought, Crumrin sounds very, it kind of like sounds like an Edward Gorey type name, but with a twist. And a little bit modern, not stereotypically Edward Gorey, it wasn't cliched, it was a little unusual, and I thought, well, I could add the name Courtney to that, like Courtney Crumrin, it's CC, and it's all, cute and stuff, and Courtney's also a very kind of, it's a modern name, but it also has a Victorian quality to it, and I thought, that's how I came up with the name, yeah, and the rest is history, I guess. Although Crumrin is a difficult name to get people to remember.
I was going to ask if there's going to be any more Death
Junior. They did a Death Junior. I'm not going to work on more Death Junior because it's not my creation, and I kind of like, it's not my baby. It was just fun to work on, but he's not my baby. I would have been honored to have created a character like that because he was really fun, but. I kind of want to stick with devoting most of my time and energy to my own creations. And Batman.
I have a question specific to that vampire story you did. I am really brain
dead. Yeah, it's our third day, so don't mind us. Between the two of us, we got to have a whole brain. The vampire character in the...
He shows her his grave, and she said, it's in the daylight, and he says, I'm complicated.
Uh-huh.
Like, how is it that he can be in the day when Aloysius kills him with light, essentially?
Dawn and dusk. Have you ever read Dracula? Dawn and dusk. No, have you? I don't know. I mean, dawn and dusk is when the vampires are vulnerable. I don't know. It's not the best book ever written. Although, Anthony would probably disagree. Actually, did Keith make it in the room?
He had a conflict.
Oh, well. Because I was going to haul his ass up on stage.
Keith is our wonderful art director, and he designed the new stage dress for her.
Have we all seen the beautiful new edition?
Definitely gets a copy, because
yes.
She dressed like Courtney Crumrin and got her class high.
And you got your class high with marker fumes. Oh, yeah, are we getting crowded out at this point? Like, what time is it?
We still have 20 minutes.
Oh, we got 20 minutes. We're fine. Yeah. These people can wait.
We can go on and on as long as we want to.
You fans of other things that aren't me.
I was wondering about Unearthly.
Oh, Unearthly, yeah.
Sounds like there's a story there.
There's a story there, yeah. The publisher... I was given the impression by the publisher that they were a book publisher and that they were interested in doing graphic novel series. But apparently they were interested in hoarding properties, concepts, like to basically so that Hollywood people could come and, Hollywood people with no power and no money could come and blow smoke up their butts and tell them, oh yeah, we're going to buy this property, immediately as soon as Forever goes by, and so basically this guy, I came up with this really this idea that I really love and I really wanted to continue it on, but unfortunately he didn't, the book didn't sell enough, or that was his excuse anyway, and so I'll never get the property back because we share it with him, I share ownership with him, But basically, he paid me $2,000. He paid the artist $2,000. So if that was that's a lot of money, $4,000, to own 50% of this property, so that he can just go grow and shop it to Hollywood along with his other big stack of properties. And it's never going to pan out. I mean, that's, you know how it is. Like 90% of the properties that you see on the floor are, you know, there's some development person who's telling them, oh yeah, we're gonna option that. And 90% of the time, it doesn't turn into anything. It doesn't even turn into an option, much less a movie. But that's apparently, like, there is people somehow make a living or think that they're gonna make a living hoarding all of these ideas. And then shopping them around.
It sounds a little like day trading or something.
It's weird.
Sort of like, I'm gonna gamble on your thing.
And they exploit us, you know, idiot, naive artists and, you know, creators to come up with new property ideas.
And then later the internet tells you not to sign that deal.
Yeah, turns out, yeah, don't sign that deal. You know, do it yourself. Like, if Orson Welles make, like, the new way to go, if nobody wants to publish your work, get it, you know, just put it out on the net. You know, it's published. It's officially published now. That's viable. Like, people make, like, Kate Beaton makes, you know, she makes bank doing exactly that. Well, now she does. But
no,
she,
it's true. But don't knock the publisher.
Oh, I'm not knocking the publisher. I'm just saying, if nobody, but step one, shop it around to everybody. Step two, make sure that you keep ownership. And step three, you know, if nobody likes it, then publish it yourself and see what happens.
Well, and putting it on the web is actually, I mean, not to jump over to the how to get published in comics thing.
Yeah, we don't want to talk about that.
Putting it on the web is a really good way to get, like, to build up a following, which is then helps sell you to the publisher.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But at any rate. Or you could just, you know, read our awesome creative stuff that we did.
You could do that too.
Yeah, which honestly, you know, all things being equal, is probably better than, like, spending your life doing it, because it's a lot of work. And don't get me wrong, I love it, but, like, you know, I don't own my own home. I'm not a billionaire or anything. Not yet.
It's a lot of work, and it's larger than seen. I mean, how fast are you? Like, how long does it take you to do a single page?
Oh, you know, it takes about 8 to 10 hours.
So one page per day.
Yeah, more or less. And, you know, like, life just keeps happening. Like, you know, this weekend kicks most of my week in the ass, you know. I'm
basically, he's saying that because he's going to be late.
Because I'm going to be late with issue 8, yeah. Issue 8 might be a little late, Kate. Jill, I don't want to. I'm just warning you now.
Thanks for breaking it to me. Okay.
Issue 8, yeah, is going to be a little bit late because there was this thing, Comic-Con.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm aware of it.
Okay.
Any other questions? You can shout.
This is more like a general question, but it's just that I thought that the Elvis and Courtney, that he was kind of like, she might kind of be romantic in the past, and she might kind of remember Chloe.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Could be, yeah. I mean, I'll take that.
But like you said, he doesn't actually intend anything, but it comes out good.
Yeah. It's the thing is that it's about the story. The series is kind of about this kind of the slow development of a moral compass, right? Because she starts out being, you know, really just like a mercenary about, you know, just sicking goblins on people she doesn't like, or, you know, and, you know, abandoning babies to the goblin, you know, to the goblin world, etc., and all that stuff. But, you know, even then, you know, like, I think the story is about how Aloysius kind of doesn't want her to end up like him, but doesn't know how to stop it. Because he's so used to, you know, he's really struggling to be, he kind of found himself being a father figure to to Courtney, which has happened occasionally in his life, I suppose. And he's not good at it. He's not really good at reaching out and connecting to other people and, like, being there for people, and, you know, for whatever reason. And so he's trying with Courtney, and, like, and that's kind of the struggle for him is, like, how am I, you know, like, is my influence good for her or is it not good for her? You know, like, but without him, he shouldn't have anybody. So, you know, being, having him be there for her in as much as he is better than, is basically, it's all she's got. But yeah, there you go. I don't know.
That was a wonderful question. And
thank you.
I would have a brand spanking new copy of Courtney's Idiots. So, you can come up and get it after we're finished here or whatever, you know. Yes,
right. Why are you ducking the Batman question?
I'm sorry, what was the Batman question again? Are there any Courtney Batman crossover possibilities?
Only in his dreams.
What Batman character would fit the Courtney universe? The Mad Hatter, I think. Is, you know, as a Batman villain that I think would do well in Courtney universe.
Imagine how irritated she'd be with somebody like the Riddler.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, I hate that guy. I hate him. He's such a smug jerk. So yeah, I hate him. So Courtney would just like, oh yeah, you're toast. Also, I mean, you know, like. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like they're definitely like oil and vinegar. You know, like they. I don't know how well they would, like, they wouldn't become one thing, necessarily. They wouldn't quite mix. My thing about Batman, if you want to talk about Batman a bit, is that, you know, there's two Batmans. There's Batman and then there's Meta-Batman. Batman is the guy that lives in Gotham City and deals with his pantheon of villains. Meta-Batman is the guy that hangs out with Superman and the Green Lantern and like, has a flirtation with Wonder Woman, which I think is adorable. But he doesn't really, you know, the whole joke is that he doesn't quite, you know, he's definitely not fitting that world. He's the oil in that water. He doesn't really mix in. He's like this weird bubble of darkness in this very shiny world. And it doesn't quite, it's not his world. He's kind of meta Batman, like having adventures in all, you know, he might as well be, once he meets Superman, he might as well be riding gorillas, you know, and fighting pterodactyls with lasers. Yeah, he did that in Batman. What was that show called? Batman Awesome. Yeah, that one.
Oh, right. That one.
So I feel like the real Batman that I like Meta Batman okay, but I kind of am in love with real Batman, and I don't think he really works in a world with magic. So I don't see a crossover with Courtney and Batman. Although it'd be kind of cool for Batgirl and Courtney to meet, I think at some point. I think they would do well together. Oh, that's good. Courtney and Damian, the Damian Wayne, the son of Batman, who's a angry little curmudgeon himself. Yeah, they would just get along famously. Team up with
Tim? Drake.
Oh, Tim Drake. Courtney and Tim Drake? I don't know. I mean, Tim Drake is just kind of Robin. I don't really know that he has a really assertive personality of his own. Yeah, that's true. He's feisty. He's fun. I could see Courtney with young Jason Todd more, because he's more, like, sassy.
More of an art process.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
What did you have to do differently as an artist, you know, from the black and white to something you know is going to be produced in color?
Good question. Well, one thing is I stopped doing quite as much tone. Like, you look at the early work, and it's a lot of tedious cross-hatching, which oddly doesn't take...
On Polly, too. You toned the hell out of Polly.
Yeah, I toned Polly with grayscale. But Polly even doesn't have... I mean, it has some cross-hatching to add texture... But, like, in the early Courtneys, I added a lot of cross-hatching to create depth and tone to create more of a sense of 3D. And to get, you know, to kind of like let, you know, backgrounds fall back a little more. And it just, and now, and then now I add the cross-hatching more for texture than for volume. And I just let the color do the volume working. What is going on back there? And so, yeah, thank you for the question. So, yeah, it's a lot more blacks and whites and a lot less cross-hatching. That's for what, for starters.
I have a copy of Courtney Kremer for you as well after this.
So if Courtney is the Batman of her own universe, is there a potential Robin in her future that can carry that metaphor on?
Yes. If you don't count Butterbug, who I think is an awesome like Robin to Courtney. I mean, this is embarrassing to tell you, but there's a shot in one of the issues, volume 2, where she's in the museum and she's leaping over the giant, you know, wooden golems that are wearing the robes, you know. You know what I'm talking about? That adventure, yeah. And Butterbug's leaping with her. Is Butterbug leaping with her? Anyway, I took the shot of her leaping, and it was like lifted directly from The Dark Knight, the Dark Knight Returns book. Like that pose, that, you know, lifted directly from The Dark Knight Returns.
We can do one more question. Go ahead.
Well, we see the more intense look on the lives of some of the night things. Because we don't really know all extensive logistics on their society or how they evaluate status.
You know, I did.
Will we see any night things, or basically more about the night thing society?
I had an idea of doing the goblin character, Butterworm, and having a whole Butterworm adventure, like the adventure of how he got kicked out of the goblin world and like is not allowed to go back down there anymore. I thought that would be a funny little story, just to tell that story. But you know, like sometimes you have this idea of like throwing this out as a funny joke, and then you think, ooh, I'll make that a whole story and tell it, and it'll be awesome, and then it turns out to be stupid. Because, like, it just was much funnier and better just as a little anecdote. Which is kind of how I feel about Aloysius sometimes. Like, maybe he was more interesting when he was mysterious and you didn't know where he came from. Like, maybe he was more interesting in potentia than his actual adventures make him. What do you think?
I don't agree with that.
Okay.
I think getting a little bit of
okay.
I really like it.
All right.
All right. Thank you guys so much for coming to see us.
Thank you so much, everyone.
Awesome.